Welcome to another episode of, we're calling this thing Toad's Country now.
Toad's Country.
Yeah, we got rid of the Toad's tunes because we're really not playing any music, right?
Right, okay.
Dude, but welcome back to the show.
Man, I'm glad to be back.
And you're back in Vegas.
Just walking from the hotel, because we were staying at the MGM and the tournament was at Mandalay. So, you know, when you look out your window, you say, oh, Mandalay's right there, we'll just walk. And no. Negative. I mean, just to get to the tram was breathtaking. And so the heat is no joke.
Yeah. I would say that your heat in Nashville is, I never really understood when they always say Vegas was a dry heat until I was in Nashville in like a July.
Yeah.
And it's no different than getting out of the shower, walking in Nashville in July.
But you got to plan.
Start dripping.
Yeah, you plan your showers, man. You like, okay, do I take a shower this morning? Because I know as soon as I walk outside, I'm going to be dripping sweat. Do I just not, you know? But yeah, I feel that.
What's your favorite thing about coming to NFR here in Vegas?
The shows, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, when you come out here, it's you can pretty much be guaranteed that it's going to be a great country music audience,
right?
No matter where you are, and all the shows that are going on, not only just the shows that I do, I love going to shows. So just for instance, you know, we were hanging out with Randall King the other night, and then the small things that we get to do, like with the Cowboy Channel and other things for Cowboy Christmas, and I think just all of that is pretty, you know, NFR does some cool stuff.
Do you go to the rodeo?
I have. I didn't go. I haven't been this year. I've sang the anthem a couple of times,
right,
for NFR, but I no. So I've been a couple of times, but we don't. It's not on our list, because usually when we come, we're stacked
working
pretty good. Yeah,
work. Yeah, thing after thing after thing. Who's like, when we talk about you going to see an artist, like, who do you like to go and see? Is it friends of yours? Is it people that you haven't seen before, newer artists, that sort of thing? Like, what is your, like, where does it fit in there where you get out and you actually go and see an artist?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, without, don't take this the wrong way, but with all the things that we have going on during NFR, it has to be something pretty special for me to say, okay, I'm going to stay up later than I normally would to go to this. And so normally it's buddies,
right?
You know, to go out and hang out with people that you enjoy hanging out with, and it's more of a VIP experience as opposed to just going to a show.
Right.
So that's, it usually has to be somebody we know and we can hang with and have beers with and whatnot.
I was laying on the couch a week and a half ago, didn't have plans to do anything. And I think I've been out almost every single night, like,
it happens,
going to see shows. Yeah. And I told you earlier, I was trying to stack shows on one night, going to see three of them, but that's, I don't even know who the heck I was kidding, trying to think I was going to do that.
That happens too. You got all these, like, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this. And then you get to the first one, it's like, golly, I'm really loving where I am right now. I
don't even want to leave.
No, exactly. So
yeah. Well, I went and saw Love and Theft, I think it was Saturday. I told them goodbye before they went on stage. Like, hey, I'm going to stay for a few songs. There's some other things I want to do. Well, I ended up staying for the whole show. And then after the show, they're like, dude, you're still here. I was like, well, couldn't walk away from
right.
It, man. It was just like one of those things where you listen to music and you're in that vibe, and it's like,
and I'm sure that made them feel good.
Yeah.
that you didn't leave. You're like, man, I just, you know, I was enjoying myself.
I don't think we've talked since Things You Do in a Truck came out with Trey Landon, and I just have to say, I absolutely love that song.
I love it too. I love it from the day we wrote it.
And him wrote that together.
Mm-hmm. We wrote it, me and him, and Blake Bollinger. They were all out on the road with me. We wrote it in the back of the bus. How did it all come up? I think I had hey, Things You Do in a Truck, and Trey was like, we're not writing another truck song,
right?
You know, and I was like, well, just think about it. I got to go to sound check. And then I came back, and he is like, all right, well, listen, we got something, kind of see what you think. And I was like, yes. It's one of my favorite songs.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's one of those songs for me that when I listen to it, there's some songs that I believe will last the test of time. And it's one of those ones that if I don't hear it for a while and it comes back on, I don't change it. I just listen to it. My kid's 16. She's in the back singing it like crazy too, which is super neat. Like,
yes.
When it resonates with youth, I think that's when you
got
to win.
That's the litmus test, man. You got, you know, if you can get the kids to love it and to latch onto it, then you're definitely on the right path.
That's like free marketing if you really think about it. When, sure. when they start sharing that stuff and putting it out there, and
no doubt,
it's pretty damn nuts, to be honest with you. Like, I watch a lot of this music, and people send me music all the time. I listen to it, but when a kid sends you music, you kind of look at it a little bit different because it's you want to go listen to it.
Yeah.
Just to see what that attraction is. We were talking earlier about Zach Top and about just how he just came from nowhere. And it's like, how do you put all those pieces together to find out that this is what everyone's leaning towards? You wonder if it's on purpose. You wonder if it's on accident, if it's just what people like.
Man, you could be, if you could figure that out, if you could, you'd be the wealthiest man on the planet. If you could figure out what makes people, when they hear music, go to the far extreme of, they have to tell all their friends about it.
Right.
And then their friends have to do the same thing. And then, and then not only that, it becomes a cool thing to just say, oh, I love Zach Top.
Yeah.
Or I love Zach Bryan. I love Luke Combs. Even though they may or may not.
Right.
But their friends do. So they want to be cool with their friends. So when they get in the car or wherever they're, whatever they're doing in their bedrooms, and they're like, you know, let's listen to some music. And then so they play this because they know their friends love it. How do you create that?
It's absolutely nuts, man. I come across some of this stuff, and I have a playlist that I share and what she listens to versus what I listen to. And then it just Spotify just creates this kind of a cool, I forget what it's called, but there's a name for it where, I don't know, this playlist, I listen to some of the stuff and I'm like, what? Kids are all over the place. They're not genre based at all.
Right.
I'm not totally that way. I think I lean towards country these days more than anything. But the other side of it all is sometimes I hear this other stuff and I'm like, God, I love this. Like, this is really cool. Whether it's mellow, whether it's hip hop, R&B, like, and then you find these kids these days that are actually going back and listening to old music, which is, to me, is nuts. It's absolutely nuts. So we listened to the frontman the other night, and it's like, she's like, I don't know who these people are. I'm like, you'll know their songs. You'll see.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you look over and everyone's singing it and you're like, well, I didn't expect that to happen just because it's something new and different, and which is cool.
And that tends to happen to any show that I go to, especially, you know, somebody from 5-10 years ago. For instance, I was recently went to a Billy Currington concert, and I'm like, I forgot about that song. Oh, I forgot about that. Holy crap, I forgot about that song. You know, he's just hit after hit after hit, and you know, you think of Billy Currington, you think, oh yeah, he's, I know the name, and I know he's had some songs, but then you just forget the body of work.
Yeah.
Until you hear it again.
I like to tell the story. I was not a huge fan of Sam Hunt when he first came out, and then I was driving to San Diego one time, and I think it's called Behind the Pines, that acoustic album that he
yeah.
has, and there's like 5 number ones on it.
I know.
And Billy Currington has one of them. I think We Are Tonight.
Yep,
We Are Tonight. And I just sit back, and I'm like, I have a whole new love for Sam Hunt.
Cop Car.
Yeah, Cop Car. Keith
Urban. And that Chesney song, Come, was it Come Over?
Yeah. Yeah. Come Over. And then William Michael Morgan.
Met a Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one.
So, yeah, you absolutely. Sam's great.
Yeah, that's what's neat about trying to find new music and seeing new music is it's so easy, like, now to find it. I think that with your career, people know you from Fish, Kiss, what is it?
Keep Them Kisses Coming.
Keep Kisses yeah. Coming. For some reason, I always want to call it Dark, Something in the Dark, but that's another total song. But, like, when you start finding yourself writing new music, how do you find yourself resonating with the youth? Do you do it by getting together with younger artists like a Trey Landon and all that kind of stuff?
I don't try not to pigeonhole it to write for a specific age group because honestly I think about some of the artists that I'm fans of and I'm thinking, okay man, you're too old to be singing that, you know.
Sure.
So I don't want to be that guy, so I try to write songs that it doesn't necessarily shine a light on, you know, how, my specific demographic, but it doesn't alienate a younger demographic either. So it's a challenge, but just try to write songs about real life but also be honest with myself.
Sure, true to yourself.
And
yeah.
Stories that I want to tell.
When you were out on the road with Trey Landon, was it a setup thing already that you guys were out on the road together?
Yeah, for that particular trip, it was just he came out just to write songs.
Okay, not to play.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did get him up to come out and sing, you know, because he's just, I'm such a fan of his, and and that anytime we're together and we're there's a stage, we're both going to end up on it somehow or another.
Right.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's one of my favorites.
You were talking about this Christmas. You have some shows at your coffee shop back. It's outside of Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about where it's called. Grindstone.
Grindstone Cowboy is the name of the restaurant, and started out as a coffee shop. Quickly morphed into a full blown restaurant, but it's also a music venue and it's a full bar. Where, you know, I play there once a month. But yeah, we do these annual Christmas shows. I think this is our fifth annual, and so like the first one we played one show, and we had it at Puckett's down in Columbia, Tennessee, and then it did well. So we did another the next year. We did a full show, sold like 300 tickets, and we're like, oh, this is kind of cool. So then I had my venue, and we opened, and we did two nights. They sold out so fast. So then the next year I said, let's just do three nights, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
All right.
Sold those out super quick. And so this year we did four nights and they sold out. Probably could have done more. So we don't know what next year is going to be like, but yeah, we got four Craig Campbell family and friends Christmas shows.
Who do you bring out to those?
So it's different people. Like I got Walker Hayes. I got Tiger Lily Gold, Teddy Robb, Julia Cole,
all the bangers.
Just friends, people that I can text and say, hey, man, we're having a family Christmas show. If you're in town, we'd love to have you. And
I met Julia Cole at a wedding for Austin Burke back in Nashville and watched her journey. It's unreal. That girl's unreal.
Yeah. You know, like great singer, great songs, and then just genuine.
Yeah. And then, so when you announce these shows and you just put it through your social, that sort of thing? Or like with Walker, does Walker throw it on his? Or
well, honestly, they don't have to. I could, just like we were talking earlier about the Secret Santa stuff, you know, the shows that people buy tickets to, they don't even, it's the same. Like I could just say, hey, here's our Christmas shows, and they sell.
That's so awesome.
And people don't even care who's on the bill.
We just drove by Al Dean's. When are we going to have a Campbell's out here?
I mean, right? For real.
I mean, you got enough music for it.
Or we could do a Grindstone Cowboy out here.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm not saying that it won't ever happen.
I think that'd be kind of cool. So I think the last time we talked, you were just a coffee shop. You just said it's a restaurant now. So how did that whole process come together? Did you just started selling small foods and then all of a sudden people asked for more?
So we always had a food menu, and that was part of the plan. And what that plan was, we had, like, me and my wife had never done this before.
Right.
So we just put together this little menu, kept it small. And then people were just coming, and that was, it was so, all of the research that I did was based on Starbucks and how they're 70-75% drive through. So everything that we had thought was going to happen was completely reversed. So we were thinking 25% food, 75% coffee. And so it just flip flop. So I rearranged my kitchen four times within the first 30 days to try to create some efficiency, because it was a mess back there.
Mm-hmm.
So the customers told us, they were like, you're not a coffee shop, you're a restaurant.
It's kind of neat. And they keep coming.
Yeah.
And it's still open. It's still doing good. You look at a Starbucks brand, and then you look at like all these Dutch Brothers, scooters, they're all drive-thrus. So you can't even go into them.
Right.
I never even thought of that. I go to Starbucks almost every morning and sit down, and that's where I wake up.
Well, see, that was the research that I did. I never thought at all people would come in and sit down, because Eagleville is a population of like 750.
Super. Oh wow!
But man, we get people from Murfreesboro, Franklin, Nashville.
How far is the drive from Murfreesboro?
25 minutes.
Not horrible.
No,
just to come in and sit and hang out.
On Saturdays, man, can't serve one more plate.
Really?
It's wild. It is absolutely.
You're going to get bigger there? Can you grow?
We could, but I think part of the charm of the Eagleville location is kind of how small it is.
Intimacy.
Yeah. And because we own the whole building, we could take over the middle space and kind of blow it out and put some more seats. But I do think part of the, like, people can, this is so quaint and so cool. And so to make it bigger would take away from that.
Kind of cool. Let's talk Christmas tradition at home. What do you guys do?
Christmas.
Other than your four shows.
Well, tradition, you know, up until now, like now I got a 16-year-old.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Are you doing your Christmas shows on Christmas, like right around Christmas, or before, in between Christmas and New Year's?
the couple of weeks leading up to Christmas.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. No, we don't. I don't know if you could do a Christmas show on Christmas Day. I don't know.
Well,
if people
I didn't.
Show up.
Yeah. I mean,
or Christmas Eve. I don't. Maybe a Christmas Eve show.
Be kind of cool. I think people might do that.
Yeah. Where we are down there, I mean, most people on a Christmas Eve usually go to a church service.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to Christmas tradition.
Tradition.
The Campbell family.
Oh, man. It's been all kinds of stuff. But now it's a little different just because we have a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. It used to be the, you know, Elf on the Shelf. Krissa was terrorizing everybody for 25 days. But now they've gotten that figured out. Not much of a tradition. We used to go to Colorado every Christmas because basically that was almost a guaranteed white Christmas because that's where my wife's family's from.
Right.
But now, since we have Grindstone, it's hard to, especially Grindstone hadn't been open very long, so it's hard to leave for an extended period of time. So we try to stay close during the holidays, but I guess if we had a tradition, it would be we would normally go to Colorado, but we haven't done that in a couple of years.
The kids grow up, man. I think the stuff they want changes. Their expectation of Christmas changes. Some kids, just their expectation is way up here, and other ones really. I think the youth now is kind of looking at a thing that's more about family, and it's the smaller things in that time versus when I was a kid, it was like, what's the biggest present I got?
For sure.
I don't think kids think like that too much anymore.
Mine were for sure, maybe not the biggest, but they always would separate them on Christmas Day and count them. And like, I got more than you, you know, that silliness of kids. But Presley, my oldest, is really digging into the true meaning of Christmas here recently. Talking, you know, just she's super focused on what Christmas is about and, you know,
right.
The birth of Christ and. You know, the Santa thing is fun, and the presents is, you know, she still expects presents, but she's definitely trying to keep it centered around the real meaning.
That's good. I think just in the last year or so, I mean, God's always been a part of my life, but I think it's more in the forefront now that people are. I watched during this election, not to get into politics, but if you had an American flag out, it was a bad thing.
Right.
And I would just sit back and like never understood that for the life of me.
Either.
Never. But now you look at people are relying on God so much more as a part of their daily routine. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't pray every day, but I pretty much do. You know, in some form or fashion, I talk to God. And I think now that these kids are, they see life a little bit different. And I think that's super neat.
And it goes back to like we were talking earlier about, you know, what. And I don't want to take it, I don't want to diminish anybody's, you know, a youngster's faith, but, and I love it, but it seems to be a cool thing.
Yeah.
Nowadays to write a Bible verse, you know, for the athletes on their cheeks, or to give praise to Jesus Christ at the end of a great game or even a bad game, you know.
Right.
And I'm here for it.
Dude, me too, 100%. And it's like when you see that stuff, it's, acceptance. It goes back to that. Before, I think there was that guy's just a church dude, and now it's not that way anymore. I think everyone accepts Christ in their life in some form or fashion, which is super neat. I was with Steven from Love and Theft this weekend, and he told me that he just started writing a Christian album.
Yeah.
And he sent me six of the songs that are done, and my goodness. Like,
oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'll play one when we're leaving. Like,
okay.
I think it's called Amen. He was like, the first time he listened to it, play it super loud. I was like, holy cow. Like, it's just... You watch him with whiskey on my breath. Like, that's like, he doesn't want to meet Jesus with whiskey on his breath. And you're just like, dude, you started years ago.
Right.
But we had this conversation. I was like, one of my favorite bands growing up was Jars of Clay. And they were a total Christian rock band.
Right.
And I loved their music. And I love that people are stepping out and being who they truly are. I've got artists that I've been friends with for a while. I mean, you look at Hardy. Hardy wrote all this country stuff, came out as country, but that's really not his roots. There was a girl named Royal Lynn. That I brought out to Vegas. She played for me twice, but her roots were rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just went and saw her at Virgin. She opened for a band called Skillet. And I just watched her. I was like, dude, you're doing what you love. And I think that doesn't matter what that is. And where you just talked about writing music and being true to who you are and what you write about is what it's all about. Because then I think the real comes out then.
Authenticity is it's hard to, even for me in the last couple of years, when I was signed over at Broken Boat, my very last song that I had on the radio, I didn't pick it, but the people at the label did. and I thought it was a great song. But in retrospect, it was not a Craig song, and so it was, I couldn't sell it,
right?
Even though I thought I was. My fans and everybody else could tell that ain't Craig.
What single was that?
See You Try.
Okay.
That's the name of it. But yeah, if you can put your foot down and say, no, I'm doing this, I think in the end, it'll shine through.
I think the world with music has that platform now where you can. And that's what I think that I love about it is you can get your fan base online before you even play shows.
Right.
And I think that's kind of like, I watch Royal stuff, and when she was doing country, she was getting traction. But then when she went to the rock stuff, I mean, her videos are getting millions of views now. And I'm like, I think that's, you're right. The authenticity comes out, you become true. People can relate to you as a fan of music and as a person. And now with social, dude, they know everything about your life.
Right.
It's nuts.
Yeah. You can't hide it anymore.
Not a horrible thing.
No, I mean, it can be, you know, but at the same time, if you do it right, it's, I love fans being able to see behind the scenes.
Sure.
Or getting to know you better. So that's the plus side, I think, for social.
How do you, like, juggle? I mean, you were just in Vegas this summer for a volleyball thing. How do you juggle music with being on the road and doing shows with that whole thing being there for your kids and your family as well? That's got to be, like, super difficult. Like, that calendar's ridiculous.
It is, but it's, oh, man, I wouldn't change a thing. You know, what's that old Trace Adkins song, you know, you're going to miss this. Like,
yep.
I always keep that in my brain of, like, it might be like, man, I just want to go home and sit down for a minute, you know. But one day my girls aren't going to be playing volleyball, or they're not going to be relying on me to be there to be with them, and I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying it. It's a challenge to put everything on and fit it all in. So we go through the year and we look at what's coming up, and we're like, okay. Nationals for volleyball, blocking it off, no shows. You know, we send an email to management and say, hey, I'm out of, don't even think about it, you know. But we, at the end of the day, I love being busy. I'd rather be busy than sitting at home sometimes wishing I was busy.
Sure.
Especially with music, you know, because country music is very out of sight, out of mind. So as long as I can just keep my foot, my place in line and keep doing what I'm doing, I'm happy.
Let's talk music in 25. What do you got on the schedule? Like, what are your goals for 25? Because it's coming quick. This year was a joke, dude. I think it was January. Next thing I knew, it was December.
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's, if you'd asked me 5 years ago what the next year, 2 years would have looked like, I never would have thought I'd be, you know, owning a restaurant, opening two more.
You are opening two more.
Yeah.
Holy cow. In Nashville?
One's just south of us now, and then one's going into Florida. I would have said, there's no way. Short term, I mean, I have something coming down the pipe that who knows if it's a great idea, maybe the dumbest idea I've had in a long time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, See You Try was my last country song at country radio. And that was when I was at Broken Bow. Now I've been independent for almost 5 years now. And the opportunity has presented itself to come back to radio with a song.
Good.
Independently. So as of now, we have the song picked. The team is getting everything together, getting the strategy laid out, testing the waters. It's shaping up to be something pretty cool. So should release that song sometime in February, maybe March. So that, I guess, probably our main focus right now as far as music is concerned.
Well, there's a template out there for it. There's a guy that just went independent and took Drew Baldridge went number one.
That's where I got my inspiration from.
Beautiful.
And when I saw that happen, I said,
do you know him?
I know him really well. Matter of fact, a couple of the people that are on my team now were on that team.
For that purpose.
For that same record. So like you said, the template is there.
Yeah.
Like if we can just, the model, here it is. Hey, this is what we got to do. It's not going to be easy for sure, but it can be done.
That's got to be the neatest thing, because you sit back and look at a guy like him. I mean, that song's, I want to say he told me it's 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
Same with this one that I got coming out.
Good. I mean, it can be done. I think that's the neatest thing. You put your faith in it and just dive right in.
Right. So I'm a little scared, I guess, you know, what's radio going to, how are they going to accept me coming back after 6 years of not being on the radio? But I trust that I do have some great relationships in radio, but I also fully trust that this is just an undeniable smash hit song. So
you're going to, that's the radio tour again.
Yeah.
You're going to be gone in two, three cities at a time.
Yep.
Like come in, play a song, do your thing, get on the plane, go to the next one or drive. You ready
now,
for that?
Well, I am ready, because here I know how it works, and I know that there's a handful of stations out there that would look at me just like you're looking at me right now and tell me, oh yeah, we're going to play your song, and they never would. And I remember those people. So when they call and say, hey, can you come do this freak show? And I'm like, what?
Can I already try this with you guys?
Yeah, and they did. And I'm not afraid to say it, because what's worst case scenario? They're not going to play my song. They're not going to play it anyway.
Right.
Either way.
Yeah.
So save myself the time and the money of
getting there.
So I kept a list of those.
I'm sure you did, whether you wrote them down or then they're mentally.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you, I guess, do you start your own label as well?
We did.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
So this will be run very similar to what Drew did, his own label, his own music, his own money, his own...
Everything.
Wow.
Everything. We make the decisions. You know, we compare it to, you know, like a record deal as a cruise ship. You sign to, a Broken Bow, a Universal, a Sony. You know, to get a decision made, you got to go through so many people. But, you know, being independent, I only got to make me, management, my wife, as long as we can make a decision. And
right.
So we're a speedboat.
You don't have to go up like 13 levels of people and wait for an answer.
To be ultimately told, no, we're not doing that.
Right.
I hate, bro, don't get me started. You know, as a creator of music, you're calling, going up to the top of the food chain, and that just to be told, we're not going to do that.
It's crazy to me that I sit back, and I think that's my biggest fear with artists that sign to labels, is that they already had a vision on what they were going to be doing.
And they signed them for that.
And they signed them for their vision. They signed them for their, I mean, nowadays they sign them for what they're doing socially.
Exactly.
And now you come out to this place where it's kind of like, we're going to dictate what you do, but wait a minute, I'm not saying I made it, but I kind of got to the place where I am today without you guys, without your influence. So that's got to be probably the most difficult thing. I mean, I know that there's people out there, you might have been one of them that's put some stuff out there on the internet in regards to what's good about being independent and what's bad about being signed to a label. And it's kind of like some people, when I would ask these young artists, what's your goal? Sometimes it's to get a deal. But their version of getting a deal has nothing to do with necessarily radio. It's getting them in a place where they can get on tours with bigger artists. So I guess there's two sides to that that can help or hurt you.
It can. And honestly, and I tell people this all the time, and I know you probably give advice, but try not to look at a record deal as like, I want to be famous. It is, but use it and... have that goal, have it set, and so this is what I'm going to do. But today's market is a little different, just with social media, and record labels don't really know what to do, and there's no blueprint.
No.
You know, and have a champion. If you have a champion at a record label, you're going to have a great chance of being successful, because they're going to fight. I didn't, when my first record deal with Bigger Picture, everybody was a champion for me, and I was successful. I was very successful. I had more success there than I did at Broken Bow. And then, so at Broken Bow, I had a champion, but then he sold the company. So then my champion was gone.
Right.
So I kind of just got pushed to the side a little bit, but one of the most frustrating things that I've been a part of in my whole 10, 12 years of commercial success is having people make decisions on my life and my career that have no idea who I am.
Sure.
Never been to my show. Never met my wife. Never met my kids. Never come and had dinner with me at my house. Like, you're making these decisions that affect me and my entire life, but you don't have a clue who I am.
Sure.
Ah, man.
It's got to be tough, man. I mean, literally. I think I would hate to sit back and, I mean, I understand it on a different level of someone else making that decision of what's going to be best for your career. Not saying that you have all the answers for it.
Right.
I mean, it's supposed to be a team thing.
But I know what gets me fired up.
Sure. Well, I think the other side of that is you're out there doing shows and you see the people respond to something. I sat down with an artist. I don't even care. Her name is Cassie Ashton. I just saw her. She played over at the Santa Jam.
Right.
And her label rep was in the podcast. And I asked questions about singles that she had and what they were releasing to radio versus what people were responding to live. And the rep was like, and I'm like, no.
We got to know.
I'm going to ask the question anyway. And it just was like one of those things where politically, there's not an answer for her. But as a human being, it's like, I'm playing these shows and I know that this is the single that they're responding to. And I think it was I Don't Go Back. Like, I listened to that song and I'm like, that is a huge hit. But they never released it. I think they released it like maybe 2-3 years later. So I don't know what the case was, two years. Or maybe they didn't. But they were pushing a completely different song. But at her live show, everyone in the crowd knew that song. And that's why you have social media to support what you're doing. You could put whatever song you're going to put out now and probably just tease it on TikTok, tease it if you haven't already, or you're probably going to really get an idea how people respond, because now you're putting your own money into it. So,
yeah. Well, hey, that happened with Outskirts of Heaven.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody that was as excited as I was about that song. And I remember it was December 2015. I did a show in South Carolina. It was me. Darius Rucker was on it, and Charles Kelly. It was a fundraiser. Darius had a big fundraiser for a church, hospital.
Okay.
And I did Outskirts of Heaven, and it was the only standing ovation of the night. A completely unknown song at that time. You know, nobody had heard it.
Acoustic, or did you do it?
Just me and my guitar, and I had an accompanist with me, but it was acoustic, so. My record rep was with me, and as soon as I was done, I said, y'all saw that, right? And they were like, yeah. I said, y'all got to have my back, because when I'm going straight to the office next week, and I'm going to tell them what happened, and y'all need to back me up. So I walked into the office, and I said, man, I think we got to go with this. I said, I can tell you something's happening with this song. I don't know what it is, but something's happening. And he was like, okay. I guess let's just hope it downloads.
Right.
That's all he was worried about. And
it did all right.
It checked out. It checked all the boxes.
I just wonder, like, if they sit in offices now and actually still give an artist an opportunity like that, because I've seen some stuff online where I forget who it was that wrote it. Like, I go back to it might have been you, it might have been someone else, about these artists that are on TikTok and they put all this stuff out. They get signed a record deal because of something they did on TikTok, but they never played a damn live show before. Is that you that did that?
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't 100% sure, but like, you look at that, and that's the reality of it all. Like, I sat with Lily Rose, and she was serving at a golf course place, like, and her single took off, and the next day or the next week, she's in these guys' offices that she was serving to, and the guys that were there were like, hey man, was I nice to you? And I like sit back and go, you never know.
Right.
But the other side to that is, like, some of these artists that are on The Voice and American Idol and all this, like, the experience level you assume that they would have for being on the shows does not come back full circle to a live show, period. Because you're playing with the best bands in the world, first of all, and then you come out and you got to get a new band and put this stuff together. I have firsthand experience with someone like that, and it didn't translate.
No, the video that I made was a legit. Now, I elaborated a little bit, exaggerated, if you will, just a little bit. But the conversation, it was with someone from a major label talking about this artist that they had signed, and I'm like, that's cool, man, you know, because I was trying to figure out a way to get into the circle of, like, maybe I can get in and write some songs with this guy. And I'm like, right. Do you have any music? So I can kind of get an idea of who he is. They were like, he's taking voice lessons right now. I'm like, what?
What?
No, that's, it was the most bizarre conversation. And I said, do y'all sign him to a record deal, right? Like this. So the video that I made was
about that.
About that.
That is just nuts to me. I mean, again, I've been around a lot of new artists, and I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand, where it's kind of like they become an internet sensation, and then it doesn't translate to a live show. You see the fear, you see the awkwardness. But we were talking earlier about writing in age. Dylan Snyder, I've always said this about this kid. Like, I've known him, I think, 5 or 6 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. But I believe he's always written older than what he is, which I think that now that he's growing up, he can finally start writing about that stuff. And I would always say that, but it's kind of neat, I think, that to take that step back to write music and let someone a little bit different jump into it, I think is kind of cool. And let someone either youthful or older write it. Like, I think Dylan wrote Mama's House. Dustin Lynch put it out. It crushed. Well, Dylan's latest album, he put his own version of the same song on it. It's kind of neat because he added some lyrics to it, some stuff that hit home a little bit closer to him, which I thought was neat too. That's the fun, I think, of country music, being a writer, being a live artist as well, because there's a huge difference, man.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You, as a writer, as an artist that writes, you for the whole time that you're trying to have success, you're thinking about yourself.
Right.
But the idea of writing for somebody else is totally different. Totally. It sometimes you can write a song for yourself that will trigger another artist to be like, man, I feel that. Can I, you know, let me have that song, you know. But typically it's the strategy of writing a song, it's either if you're an artist, you want to write for yourself, but if you're trying to write for somebody else, it's way different.
I know that I was having a conversation with Drew Green. He was with Hardy. They wrote this song. FGL put it out years ago. It crushed. Well, then Drew Green, this year, I was sitting with him and we were talking about, he's putting the song out. We reached out to Hardy to get on it. And Hardy was like, dude, I was going to put it out and have you on it. And they went back and forth with this thing. But I think Drew Green ended up putting it out first with Hardy on, which I think is super neat that you can come back and revisit those songs later. Yeah. That you give to other people. And I think that's the fun of it all. I know that I talked to Sam Groh, has a song called Song About You. Nate Smith loved it and wanted to put it out. And he's like, I would just change it to a little bit rocker, you know, that sort of thing. And I just think that that's the fun of this genre of music, that you can do that and get away with it and people don't frown on it.
Right. No, it's, country music is special in that way.
Love it. Well, dude, I really appreciate the time today. I look forward to 25 with you, your new single, The Radio. I wish you the best of luck with that. Is there more music coming? Like, I want you to do more stuff with Trey Land and that style of stuff because that song is so much fun.
Dude, you know, recently I put out a record called Class of 89 where I went in and recorded a whole bunch of songs that I love.
Right.
Like, songs from the 90s. The Class of 89 record is out. There's only 6 songs on it. I went in and it took off, and people gravitated towards it in a way that I was like, okay, I need to make a full-length album. So I have done that. So I do have all that in the can ready to go, and some really, really good classic songs that we cut and I put my spin on. Outside of that, you know, we're really focused in on this new single.
Good.
I don't want to muddy the waters with new music and
the focus is that. Gotcha.
Yeah. And then there is a song that I'm re-recording from one of my first records that I'm hopefully going to turn into an event. So there's a couple of people that I have on my list to get in to come in and sing it with me. So who knows? If I get the people that I want on the song, it may be the follow-up.
Yeah, I don't think you'll have any problems with that. Fucking Craig Campbell, man. One more question. Favorite song you've ever been a part of?
Favorite song I've been a part... You know, it's... Outskirts of Heaven has done some really... And when I talk about Outskirts of Heaven, I talk about... being that song. Mainly because of the messages that I've received from people, you know, people that have lost people, loved ones, whether whatever, you know, whatever the situation is, the song helped them deal with that loss.
Right.
I never thought that, like, when I wrote that song, I had no, and that was not the mindset of, like, I wrote it for me as, like, this is what I want when I get to heaven. But I had a guy message me and said that he had lost his dad, and his dad was his best friend, and he couldn't handle it, so he literally made the decision to take his own life, and he was in the truck headed home to do it, and he said the song came on, and it was more, he said it was like my dad telling me, dude, settle down, I'm good, don't worry about me, you know, you gotta, I'm in a good spot right now, I'm, you know, this is, and he said that song literally saved my life.
It's the power of music, man.
Yeah, so I guess it Outskirts of Heaven definitely is top.
What a perfect way to finish, dude. Merry Christmas, happy holidays.
Same. And I got you.
I will see you in 25.
Right on.